This podcast is sponsored by Green Skies Analytics, where they do everything tech-related, but only for internal audit. Although compliance and risk management, y'all are cool too, so feel free to check it out also. To find out more, please visit greenskiesanalytics.com, but it's more likely that you're just going to Google it. So to find out more, please Google Green Skies Analytics.
This podcast is also brought to you by Audit Board, the leading cloud-based platform transforming how enterprises manage risk. Audit Board's integrated suite of easy-to-use audit, risk, and compliance solutions streamlines internal audit, SOX compliance, risk management, and security compliance. Automate processes and improve execution with Audit Board's purpose-built solution, which is designed to address the most pressing challenges of today's practitioners. Experience the latest in audit, risk, and compliance technology. Visit auditboard.com to schedule your product walkthrough to see Audit Board's award-winning platform in action today.
Today, we have Jessica Fernandez-Simpson on the show. She is the audit director at Nielsen Media Research. So the people that are counting all the numbers as far as who's watching what and all that kind of good stuff. And it was really interesting talking to her, with the most of the conversation revolving around dealing with change, like a lot of change across the organization. So they have a decentralized IT environment there at Nielsen. And so relative to the change management process within the ITGC's piece, so making functionality changes to their applications and dealing with that across all the applications, and then also dealing with changes to compliance for their products. So there's constant changes, and Jessica goes into a really good example, but there's constant compliance changes that have to be accounted for. And so they have to be very reactive to those and make sure that they kind of have everything covered there. And then lastly, so Jessica was also a former recruiter. And so we got her perspective on what it's going to look like post COVID as far as hiring and retaining talent, because it's going to, you know, probably open up a bit as far as remote work. And, you know, you no longer have to work, you know, within driving distance to your company. It could be, you know, a flight distance. So how to kind of maintain those relationships with our folks, and how to, again, retain those folks within our department. So really interesting perspective from Jessica. I hope you guys enjoy it. I know I did. Here we go.
We moved to Agile successfully this time.
Nice.
It's been tried in the past, I'm sure, by many companies where you're doing kind of a hybrid waterfall Agile. To some level of Agile from a change management perspective a few years back. And then in more recent years, we have varied departments that are in different stages of moving to kind of that DevOps framework, which is really looking to create automation and eliminate manual touch points and things of that nature, and just create some efficiencies in the process at Nielsen. So you have certain groups that are maybe farther ahead than others. Some of the legacy groups that work with older systems or something like that are a little stuck in the past. But with all of this migration and movement at varied speeds for different groups and different applications and things, it just creates an interesting environment to audit from an IT perspective. Because while you would always look for one singular process, it's not that cut and dry. And you really have to dig in for each individual app or product or what you're looking at to really understand what you're working with from an IT audit perspective. So
what is DevOps?
So again, I'm not directly embedded within the IT organization. And the way it's working at Nielsen is really just looking to automate testing, automate migration. And really the cloud is used in a lot of cases to facilitate that, right? Traditionally, we had a very manual, very waterfall, very like ticket and hands-on driven process to get a change from development into production. And with the movement into cloud, it's facilitating kind of that DevOps movement of automation and removing touch. And so we're able to take a change, have it go through approvals where the system will actually gather those approvals, and then it'll automate a test set and migrate it into production as long as it passes all the tests, right? So it takes away that human error and the time constraint of people. So it makes for a more efficient environment. And it's also kind of embedding the development and the operations folks into a singular team and kind of siloed together, so they can work in more of an iterative, cohesive manner, if you will. so that it's not kind of here's Devo over here and here's the business and operations that are going to use the tool and they're not communicating. So it's really encouraging that communication and the automation of some of those manual touch points.
There was a client of mine when I was in external audit and they had put together, there's a large company and change management. So, you know, making changes to an application, affecting the functionality in whatever way, when I say change management, and they did it was some kind of simple configuration change. Like it wasn't anything major, flip a flag on, flip a flag off kind of thing. They did a video and did like a time lapse of it. And then, you know, like recorded it and showed how long, and it took like 2 days to make it all the way through. And I don't know how it ended up. Like, I don't know how we, as the external audit, you know, how the, I guess they just sent it to us or somebody did. Maybe there's an issue with the change management process that we had found and they were like, yeah, look, you know, but it was pretty eye opening. Yeah. To see that, it was one of the first engagements I was on. And of course, you know, I was like, there's, you know, you got to have this and you got to have this and you got to have this. Cause that's what, you know, the controls are and the rules are and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, yeah, but look what it's doing to us. You know, like there's gotta be a better way. And that was, you know, 15 years ago. And I know there was, you know, agile, back then, at least in pieces of it. I don't even know if it was formalized back then, but it's been interesting to see the growth of it. And especially like, as it gets down into internal audit. So we did talk about, the ever-changing environment and DevOps and those kinds of things, but was there a specific point that you wanted to get across with that maybe we didn't hit on?
I mean, just from an internal audit perspective, it's a bit of kind of chasing a moving target, right? So when you have an environment that's constantly evolving and changing, and we're also, Nielsen is actually separating. We used to have two businesses under one umbrella. I call them watch and buy, but they are Connect and Media. And so Connect is really the groceries and the purchasing side of the business, whereas Media is more television and digital consumption and all of that. So we've sold off the Connect side of the business. And so those were so embedded from an IT environment perspective within data centers, networks, all of that. And they're now having to be segregated. And it's very interesting from an IT audit perspective, because it truly is changing, especially over the next year, we'll be looking at a completely different environment that has to be audited, right? And in a lot of cases, it will be better, because on the media side of the business, they're taking that opportunity to shift to more cloud-based solutions, as opposed to those, you know, physical servers in our data center and all of that. So I think it'll overall result in a much stronger IT environment. But from an audit perspective, you know, a lot of what we rely on year over year for audit is the knowledge base of what was it prior year and right. How do we just ensure that that same thing is occurring? And we're entering into it with a open mind of, okay, now what does it look like? Like, how do you control this? What is your change management process? What servers are you operating on? So it's almost like relearning the environment every time we go to audit it, which can be challenging because you're not really seeing those efficiencies that you would hope for in something that you're conducting annually or looking at year over year. So,
yeah, that is the good thing about lack of change, is you can roll the documentation forward, ask, you know, questions and things like that. Still not, you know, check the box type of stuff. It's not that, but you definitely don't have to reinvent everything. So that definitely sounds like a pain. For those that are maybe dealing with a similar situation, I guess a lot of folks probably are, just because agile is catching on. And I would say if something is catching on in the audit world, you know, we're typically behind. Analytics, agile, things like that have been around for a while. But development teams have been using it for years and years and years. So I'm assuming it's becoming more commonplace amongst us in the profession. Is there any advice that you could pass on relative to dealing with that? Lessons learned?
As far as auditing agile, or as far as adapting to change and movement?
Adapting to change.
Agile demo.
Yeah, I'd say adapting, adapting to change.
So I found for me, our company is very large. And since we focus on operational audits and like the IT that supports those product offerings, it's hundreds of applications, right? It's not as simple as like a 10 application financial environment. So communication. We try and keep as much open lines of communication to understand what's changing and what we're moving to and where those migrations. As you work through it, you build your relationships, and some of those communications are more frequent or more or easier, if you will, and people will contact you just to let you know things are happening. Some, it's a little bit more of a pull and a surprise when you walk in the door, but I would just say try and keep that open line of communication. We've also tried to act in somewhat of an advisory capacity. So we're the big bad internal auditor, but also how do we help you understand this idea of like risk and control and what we're really looking to like ensure is in place when you're moving to these new environments and moving to new things. And so really it kind of goes hand in hand with that communication. So not only do we want us to inform you, how can we help you make sure that you're not going to come out with some non-compliances or issues at the end of this, when you're moving this environment or this network or what have you. And we found some success in that. Again, some really good relationships through the securities team, especially that reach out and engage with us and get input from us when, hey, we're thinking of no longer maintaining history on users. Is that going to affect your audit? And once you've established those, even where there is change, it facilitates a much easier process and much easier adaptation to the environment.
Yeah, I always thought an interesting way to measure like our effectiveness is the amount of times that management reaches out to us versus us reaching out to them. So I do know also that there's a lot of change relative to your product offering in terms of being compliant with those changes. And I thought that was really interesting when we talked about it initially, but I want to see if you could speak to that and really like maybe at a high level, what types of changes those are, because I thought that was very interesting also.
Absolutely. So we have a bit of a unique business. So I come from an IT audit background and I still do focus on IT general controls. But as I mentioned, we do a lot of operational audits and those are around our product offerings, which include like television measurement. So who's watching, when are they watching, how much are they watching? Same thing for digital consumption and audio. And so our business is largely driven by a set of standards that have been created by our kind of industry oversight board, the MRC or Media Ratings Council. So the initial standards were drafted in like the 60s just to govern our television business. Well, as digital has taken off, so has the amount of standards that the MRC has published for us to comply with. So I feel like within the last 5 years, we've had hundreds of new standards issues and they continue to evolve and adapt to that digital landscape, right? So as television becomes consumed on digital, on computer, on mobile, all of that, the MRC noticed that there was a hole in helping regulate the industry on how they measure all of those consumption points. So for us, it's a bit of a moving target on both ends from the audit department, because we internal audit our products and we also facilitate the external audit process for accreditation with that industry body. And so we have to keep really close communication with the MRC to ensure we understand the standards that are coming out to govern us and what changes are coming. They do a really good job of creating standard review boards. So when they're about to issue some new standards, they'll issue a draft. They'll get everyone together on a review board meeting to allow feedback and communication on what's really affecting the environment, if there's anything that's unreasonable in those standards, which is really helpful that the industry kind of gets to speak their mind and give them feedback before they're issued as final. And it also gives us a really good line of sight into things that are coming our way that we're going to have to be compliant with in the future. The other half of the change for us is really the ever-changing landscape of what we're trying to measure, right? So as I mentioned, television was our kind of cornerstone business, the original thing. But as digital consumption of just not only television shows consumed through digital platforms, but also just digital consumption as a whole and ad exposures, you know, article exposures, all of that, those are all points of measurement for Nielsen. And so a lot of the environment changes for us and we have to therefore adapt our measurement to account for that. So, I mean, if you think of in digital measurement, you're looking at the, you know, publisher of an ad could make a change, the browser could change something. There are constant changes to things like browser cookie policies, PII limitations, opt-outs. So it's a really reactive business in that we have to kind of keep line of sight into everything coming our way. And so that's for the business really to deal with. But from an audit perspective, that also changes for us. It kind of goes back to that narrative I said for IT, is that it's ever changing. So we're constantly adapting and learning the product almost anew every time we revisit it, whether that be internally or externally. And so it's somewhat difficult with changes on both the standard side and on the product side to keep those really aligned and keep us compliant. And similar to IT, the IT process, we act in that advisory because we have such clear communications with our industry governing body and we have a connection to the business. Our internal audit department acts as almost like a communicator between the two, right? Like, we are the liaison of information. We're disseminating new standards to the business. We're disseminating business information back to the MRC for changes in our product offerings and our processes. So we kind of fill that gap, and we're also that filter to make sure it's relevant information going both directions, which puts us in a good place to really have line of sight and try and advise the business on what's coming and how they can stay compliant, but also to have line of sight into where we kind of stand with the MRC and our accreditation and our compliance in a more open fashion than just seeing an audit report at the end of things.
Hey everyone, thank you for continuing to listen to the show. We want to say thank you again to our sponsors over at Audit Board, the leading cloud-based platform transforming how enterprises manage risk. Audit Board's integrated suite of easy-to-use audit, risk, and compliance solutions streamlines internal audit, SOX compliance, risk management, and security compliance. Automate processes and improve execution with Audit Board's purpose-built solution, which is designed to address the most pressing challenges of today's practitioners. Experience the latest in audit, risk, and compliance technology. Visit auditboard.com to schedule your product walkthrough to see Audit Board's award-winning platform in action today. And so it sounds like there's a lot of relationship building and trust within this to make it really work. Something I'd be interested in is who owns those various relationships. Like, is it the chief audit executive that owns them, or like, how does the relationship ownership go?
So we are a bit of a unique situation from an internal audit department. So because we are focused on the MRC standards, we actually report up through the chief research officer here at Nielsen that goes up through to the CEO. So we do present to the audit board from time to time, but there's really almost kind of an independent piece to us in that we're really focused on ensuring compliance straight with those unique set of standards. So the ownership of those relationships, really my boss who leads our internal audit department really maintains the strongest relationship kind of across the board. He maintains those C-level relationships at Nielsen to drive this idea of audit and accreditation. Mm-hmm. And he is also very constant communication with the MRC to understand that line of sight and to keep that open line of communication. Now, at the lower levels at me, I have specific product offerings or specific areas that are my expertise, being at digital and IT general controls. So I'm really responsible for staying on top of the audit compliance as a whole and continuing to also facilitate and strengthen those relationships and communication lines with both the business and the MRC.
Okay. I think a good way that I've found is to like build those even at like a staff or senior manager level or something, maybe not at the CAE level, is, you know, we should be aware of the changes that are coming down to a degree. And even just in, you know, reading a, you know, a white paper or thought leadership or something, especially if it's within our like specific area. And then even just like providing that to the auditee to say, hey, look, came across this, thought you might find it interesting, take a read, you know, bullet point number three, you know, really stuck out to me relative to, you know, how, you know, we work together or, you know, the audit that we worked on in the past or something. And even if they don't even open it, it's letting them know that, you know, that you're thinking about them and kind of like they're top of mind. And it's just kind of a good relationship builder. So anyway, wanted to throw that out there.
No, we absolutely try where we come across, you know, information that would be relevant to the business to disseminate it out. We try when we see anything that would help them continue to become compliant, whether it be a training opportunity, an MRC thought leadership group, we're constantly connecting those dots for both sides to make sure that they feel empowered and a part of the process and have some ability to manage their own compliance without just, again, seeing those audit reports with all those findings where it's basically a to-do list. It kind of empowers them a little bit more to drive that compliance themselves.
Yeah, I like the way you put that, manage their own compliance through doing it that way. That's a good point. I like that a lot. So then we're also talking about, like, basically this whole thing comes down to relationships, which there's nothing else that I've learned from doing this. It's that, which has been fantastic. But what about, like, when we're thinking, like, I think we've gotten pretty well with the COVID thing and working remote and building relationships that way. But what about, like, post COVID and how that's going to look? What are your thoughts there on retaining talent or bringing new talent on and having, like, the relationships with those folks?
Absolutely. So, I mean, during COVID, we all had to adapt to this digital communication format, whether it be these online meetings or email communication. And as a manager, it's really my job to adapt to my resources and figure out what communication style is best for them. Like, how do they need to be managed and governed, right? So if you have a new employee, they might need a little bit more attention and a little bit more guidance. Whereas if you have a seasoned employee, you let them run and they come to you. And so really adapting to each employee has been almost like enhanced or brought to light even a little bit more based on the pandemic, right? So those that used to just fly by my office 2, 3, 4 times a day, I'm now having to have daily meetings with them. So I think post-COVID, as we open up these offices again, it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve because you're going to be both sometimes probably going to be a hybrid model where you're not going to be in the office all the time. Companies have realized in-person is not necessary in all cases. So I'm sure some people will take advantage of that at various points. So we're going to have to re-establish ways of communicating, right? When we're in office, you can still fly by my office 2, 3 times a day. Do we still need to have those daily touch points when we're not in office, just so you have that FaceTime with me and the opportunity to ask questions and get guidance? And so being really reactive to that has been the way I find I can manage people the best, right? Because everyone needs a different level of attention, needs a different level of encouragement, needs a different level of insight, and kind of reacting to that person by person is the biggest challenge and the biggest thing that I think will help them feel valued and engaged and empowered, which will make them want to stay. As far as development, so our department has been really big on certifications and trainings and all of that over the years. And the pandemic kind of halted a lot of that just from a cost perspective. There was a focus on cost savings because everyone was unsure of what was to come. And in-person trainings didn't exist anymore. And we were all having to adapt to these free CPEs. I think going into 2021, we've seen a little bit of loosening of the reins and a little more encouragement back to pursuing those certifications and really enhancing your resume, right? But I do think that we've realized that cost savings are truly possible from the training perspective. And with the multitude of opportunities to seek out archived information, take quizzes for CPEs, do 1 hour free CPEs here and there, I think has really driven what I think will be a continued theme within our department is while we truly encourage and want you to continue to develop, I think finding more cost-effective ways will definitely be a focus as we move back into the office.
What advice would you give someone entering the audit profession?
So this is interesting, and I've done recruiting in the past. So a lot of my mindset is kind of focused on that internal auditor coming with zero background in business and audit and anything. And I think it's kind of my lessons learned almost from beginning this profession, but back to asking questions, right? So you said you're always worried about asking the stupid question, but in all honesty, when you're first starting off, there is no stupid question. Learn as much as you can. And write notes, just pages and pages of notes, whether this be digital, on paper, it doesn't matter. Take it all in. I remember starting off 6 months to 12 months, you're just in a state of confusion. You're just trying to figure out what people are talking about. You're like praying that they're not using acronyms because you don't even know what a control is, let alone what some acronym is. So ask questions and take notes is first and foremost. Building a network. So it's always interesting. I've seen young people not want to take the opportunity to like utilize someone they know to get an edge up or wanting to do it all on their own. But in all honesty, a network is what's going to bring you up the rungs, right? Like no one has made it to the top by themselves. So build that strong network, have those contacts, not only for your career path, but also kind of going back to that line of communication within the audit world, like build that network, befriend people within the organization, because it's only going to help facilitate the audit process and make it a lot easier on you if you have those relationships and that network established. And less more so to the audit perspective, but overall, I would say just in career path is figure out what's important to you. So as I've moved through jobs and as I've moved through life, obviously what's important to me, whether that be money, work-life balance, title, great company culture, great manager, my needs or my wants from what's important to me at that time has kind of changed. So I think with each stage of life, with each new job, figure out what's important and then find the job that meets most of, you know, the most important boxes, right? Because the grass is not always greener. The department is not always better. The company's not always better. So find what's important to you and fulfill those and then really find a place that you can flourish and grow.
Somebody put it to me like this earlier today and said, what like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, what's your perfect week look like? Like what's a perfect Monday look like? A perfect Tuesday? And kind of think about it like that. And I thought that was pretty interesting to do that. And actually from that, I kind of looked at my calendar and I was like, this is the one thing if I can do this, like it'll be a great week, you know, if I can do this.
Yeah.
And it was kind of just a stress reliever for me anyway, because it was kind of specific to basically, I just want to take like all day Monday and just do all my like 3 to 5 minute tasks, clear my email, like get all that out of my head kind of thing. And so like, there's just a relief and like a weight off my shoulders after I went, okay, next Monday blocked off, you know, and that was it. That's all I had to do.
Block off your Monday. So you're not in meetings all day. You feel like you start the week completely prepared. Yep. No, I'm with you. Really focus on what is important to you. What makes your job easier? What makes your life easier? And so in that capacity, yeah. Organize your life.
That's what he says. The question initially asked was broadly, what's a perfect week look like? And he's like, just 3, 2, 1, just tell me what you got. Don't think about it. And I went, let me think about it, you know? And then I was like, no stress. If there was no stress, that would be great. And that's how we realized where stress, you know, was coming from and everything. So that's good exercise. But what's a commonly held belief in the profession that you passionately disagree with right now?
It's funny, this actually came up in a lot of my recent discussions for an IT general controls audit we're going over, but audit, especially when we're talking external audit, is oftentimes very black and white, right? Does control exist? Does it not exist? And as I've kind of expanded into internal audit and various roles, I've learned there are very many shades of gray that need to be considered, right? Like everything is not within a silo and everything is not a checkbox or a not checkbox. And so backing up, and looking at the entire risk landscape, looking at the entire control, taking into account and really making sure you're not just trying to get a finding for a finding, right? Like as auditors, that's our job, right? Like find the error, but is it really a risk? Is it really something like there can be blatant missing controls, but I feel like oftentimes they try and apply just a very black and white perception of something. And I have to add in those shades of gray and get them to the side of, is it really a problem? If we're able to show you this, this, and this, and they're like, oh, I guess I see what you're saying. And when you're learning, that's what you're taught, right? There's an approval or not an approval. There's this, that, or the other. And so you're looking for that specific, like, here's the policy and here's how we executed against it, or here's the automated control and it caught 100% of the things. And so really learning how to audit within those shades of gray, I think, is something that I feel really valuable, honestly, and it honestly, it helps the company too. Like when you're not just trying to nitpick all the tiny things, but really get at what's missing in their environment and what's open from a risk perspective and a control perspective. The one thing I can say is, I know this connection was made between Kevin Alvaro and you kind of meeting him and him putting me in for kind of getting the opportunity to speak with you. But I've worked with him for all 11 years at Nielsen, and it's been a really nice relationship. And he's one of those managers that fights for the department and fights for their people and pushes you out of your comfort zone. which I think is great. So just a shout out to Kevin for continuing to push me and make me step outside my comfort zone and grow. So yeah, really appreciate that.
Similarly, shout out to Kevin on my behalf because for introducing us to each other and having you come on.
There you go.
There's a lot of interesting perspectives that you have given your background, especially really appreciate the amount of change that you have to deal with. So it was great having you on. So shout out to Kevin and thank you very much for coming on. Hey everyone, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Audit Podcast. Whatever platform you're listening on right now, I'm sure there's a subscribe button somewhere, so please hit the subscribe button there. If you're listening through iTunes or Spotify, feel free to go give us that 5-star rating. It only took me about 16 seconds to give myself a 5-star review, and it really helps to get future guests to come on the show, so we'd really appreciate that. Lastly, be sure to check out the show notes and follow us on all our social media channels on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and on TikTok. Also, if interested, please sign up for our weekly newsletter from The Audit Podcast. Thank you all. Have a great one.